Hey, Emily, quit being such a space hog.
Welcome to Trent Voices, the Trent University Alumni Affairs show on Trent Radio. I'm your host, Donald Fraser of Alumni Affairs. It is Monday, May the 4th, and this is the second ever edition of Trent Voices. Today on the show, we'll be talking to Kemi Acapo, a Trent alumna and Settlement Services Coordinator for the New Canadian Centre. Kemi has a BA in International Development Studies and English Lit, and is an all-around stellar human being. It's true, actually. If you go to events in town, if you go to charitable events, you go to political events, you go to any of those fun about town things, you see Kemi there, and she's either supporting it or being involved in it. She's a great backer of our community, which is probably one of the reasons why she was named a delegate for the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women earlier this year, where she was representing Peterborough. It was great to see Kemi having some success there. Before that, we're going to be joined by Dave Tuff. Dave's a Native Studies, Canadian Studies grad and a postdoctoral fellow at Trent University. And today, though, he's not wearing so much his academic hat as he is his musical hat. He's one of those luminaries on the Trent University and Peterborough music scene. One of those guys who's been around playing for a long time, not only as a singer-songwriter, where he is an innovative original, but he's also an ace collaborator. He's been with the Wacka Bands over the years. In the early 90s, More Nasty Reds, then on to bands like The Weak Knees with someone by the name of Serena Ryder. I'm sure many of you have heard that Stompa name. To the Silverhearts. Silverhearts, one of those bands that has had Peterborough people on their feet dancing for years. We're going to hear a couple of tunes from Dave, and we're going to serve up a bit of Peterborough musical history during our interview as well. But before that, welcome back to Trent Voices. That bit of theme music comes from the Silverhearts, which, as I mentioned, one of Dave Tuff's fun bands. That one doesn't come from Dave, though. It actually comes from Tiny Davis. We're going to be hearing more of the Hearts on our exit music, and again, it's going to be one of Tiny's composition, In the Hollow of a Tree, which is a lovely and nostalgic way to say farewell each and every week. Our hello, however, comes from the Lonely Parade. I love their music. I'm a huge fan of their surf meets grunge meets whatever music. That's Empty Cure that kicks off our show each and every week. Speaking of the show, it is Trent Voices. It's a weekly long-form interview broadcast. We feature the stories and the songs of many of our talented alumni. And some of these people are going to be household names. Later on the season, we're going to go for some big guns. Some of them are going to be people who don't usually see the spotlight very much. All of them are people who are shaping our worlds in one way or another. Plus, we're going to spin great tunes from bands that resonated in both the Trent and Peterborough music scenes. All that, plus news, events, and more. Speaking of which, we're going to kick off our news right now with a story. Here we go. It's about the Trent University New Student Center. As many of you might know, and some of you don't know, Trent University is in the planning process of building a brand new student center on campus. One of the cool stories about this is that a lot of the money is being raised by the students themselves, and that's through a levy, a $10.5 million levy, as well as a $4 million fundraising initiative as part of the comprehensive $50 million campaign that Trent is putting on. But the students aren't doing this alone. They're looking for us to join in. Me, you, maybe Kemi, maybe Dave. Who knows? They're looking for staff, alumni, faculty, community members to pitch in as well. When it comes to staff and faculty, they're doing a challenge. They're asking for people to pledge an amount that either matches, double matches, or triple matches the annual student levy for the next 5 years. That drive's going on until the 23rd of June. I've already chipped in. Mine's somewhere around the double match, a little bit less than the double match. To date, they have raised $189,000. That's $99,000 coming from 93 staff and $88,000 coming from 29 faculty members. Again, you have until the 23rd to take part of that. As for news, more news, convocation is coming up, and in my hands I have our honorable degree recipients. And our honorary degree recipients are always people who are resonating either in our community or in the global community. I'll let you know who those are. First off, one that's really resonating in our local community, Drew Monkman. Drew Monkman is a friend of Peterborough. He's a friend of the earth. He's a friend of nature, and he's a friend of mine. He's best known for his two books, two naturalist books, Nature's Year in the Kawarthas and Nature's Year: Changing Seasons in Central and Eastern Ontario. He's had a big influence on getting young people involved in environmental movements in Peterborough and reflecting on their place in the world. Peter Raymond is the second degree recipient. He's incredible. Filmmaker, journalist, writer, activist. He's produced and directed over 100 films and TV series. And these aren't just fly-by-night things either. He has received 13 Geminis, and that's on 49 different nominations. One of his biggest ones would have been Shake Hands with the Devil, the Romeo Dallaire story. That was a big one. He's most recently was the co-creator and producer of The Border on CBC, and it's on, I think, 25 other different stations as well. So it's a big success. Michael Thrasher, of the Turtle Clan. Michael Thrasher is he's so steeped in knowledge and experience in education in the area of Indigenous studies. I don't know where to start listing off his accomplishments. When it comes to Trent, he was one of the first people to take part in the Elders Gathering at Trent. He was a big part of developing the Indigenous Studies PhD program. Fantastic. Recently, one of the four elders invited to conduct the Sacred Pipes Ceremony at the opening of the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples. Most recently, he gave the 2014 Newberry Lecture at the University of Sudbury. And that, my friends, is quite prestigious. Up next, Stephen Stone. I bet you any money Stephen Stone sat in the chair that I'm sitting in right this moment. Since he graduated in 66, he has become a staple and a fixture in the production of television. He's also become a really incredible entertainment lawyer as well. He's probably best known for bringing forward Degrassi, a little show called Degrassi. I'm feeling nostalgic for Degrassi right now. During his time at Trent in the 60s, he developed both Trent Radio and the Arthur newspaper. So dude was ahead of his time at Trent. And Stephen Stone, if you're listening, I'm going to get you on this show. So Stephen Stone, another Honorable Degree recipient. Finally, Martha Friendly. And Martha was in town recently. She gave the Margaret Lawrence Lecture. She's an expert on early childhood education and child care. She's the founder and executive director of the Child Care Resource and Research Unit. That's Canada's only policy research institute for early childhood education. Again, she was here for the Margaret Lawrence Lecture. She's an incredible, incredible person who is doing a lot of things to move early childhood education forward. Up next, events. Just two of them, because right now we are currently, Trent's in that kind of sleepy zone in between semesters, and so there's not a whole lot that's going on. But what we do have coming up is no longer in front of me. Contesting Canada's Future. It's happening on the 21st to 23rd of May. Folks, you want to check this out. We have Miriam Taze, the best-selling author, Maud Barlow, who is an incredible activist, the founder of Idle No More, Erica Lee, Mary Simon, and Mary was Canada's first ambassador for Circumpolar Affairs. They're all under one roof, contesting Canada's future. It's going to be a great conference. Academics, activists, artists, they're all gathering together. They're going to examine concerns ranging from the environment and science to Canadian art and music, multiculturalism, diversity, social inequality, Canada's changing place in the global order. It's going to engage the scholars, the thinkers, the cultural producers, the activists. It's going to bring them all together at events at Trent and events across the city. It's going to be pretty darn fantastic. That's what's coming up in events. Welcome back to Trent Voices. We're now at the heart of the show, and this is where we get to chat with some of the incredibly talented alumni out there in the world. While it might not be the case each and every week, we're going to start a tradition of focusing on music in the first half of the show. It is, after all, Trent Radio, the home of great local music. And I can think of, no one who fits this bill any better than my first guest, Dave Tough. Dave's been making great music as a part of the scene for many years. As I mentioned, More Nasty Reds, The Weak Knees, Silver Hearts. Anyone you want to throw in here? The Blues in a Bottle is your newest jug band.
Current project, yeah.
He's also been playing around with the edges of musical history. Playing some Ed Sullivan era Beatles, and lately tributes to yacht rock, the chill, mellow California rock of the late 1970s and early 80s. Before we get to talking to Dave, though, we're going to listen to a bit of his music. This is actually his latest. It's called Fortune's Wheel.
I could tell you about my weekend. That's all it was. It's a party, it's some downtime, it's a breather. It blew me apart like a supernova and left me on the bathroom floor, feeling dirty, trying to scrape myself clean. gypsy woman told me the first months of the summer that I'd be born a man the moment I recover from a frozen sleep under icy water that helped me wash a painful year. The hottest day of the summer, she cried. Cried. My eyes open, the afterglow of a precious lonely night. I'm far from frozen, but I'm amazed how close the fortune came to life. Fortune flung me, I spent 6 years in that bed till I was shriveled up and deaf to all the cries of danger. But the wheel came round again and I put my feet on the ground again. Now when we meet, we still say hello, love. You don't never really break that chain. I've got a tattoo of a bleeding heart and a moon inside a sun. I wear it everywhere. It's a part of me and how I see
And that was the one and the only Dave Tough. It was Fortune's Wheel, and that's different for you. That's a 7-inch piece of vinyl right there.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be on plastic?
It's pretty exciting. It's a long delayed dream come true to end up on vinyl. It was great that Tommy picked me to be to be released in that series. It was really nice.
And Tommy being from Seventh Fire, also an ex-Spade. And a great guy as well.
Yeah.
We've got a lot to get through. We've got about 15 minutes to do it. So we're going to jump right into it. First of all, Dave, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is really nice.
And it's an honor to have you here. You're known as a fixture in this scene and as a great collaborator. It seems for a lot of people like you've always been here, but you haven't. You showed up in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. When did you get to Peterborough, and how did you make your way to here?
I arrived here in the fall, in September of 1991, ostensibly to go to Trent. I was a very vague high school student, so I sort of got to the end of high school and had applied to the three Ontario schools that you sort of automatically fill out the form for, and then I got acceptances to all three, and I had no idea where I wanted to go, and I asked a friend of mine at the time what I should do. And she said, well, the Born Again Pagans are from Peterborough. I've never heard of any band from Waterloo or from Ottawa, so Peterborough's obviously got a music scene. You should go to Peterborough. So that's why I moved to Peterborough. The choice to come to Trent was to go where there was a music scene. And
it's funny because we both came same year in the fall of 91.
Yeah.
I came here. My brother was going to Trent, and I showed up, and I plunked in and landed. I went out by myself and found myself on Hunter Street, and I saw Reverend Ken. I saw Washboard Hank. I saw the burgeoning art scene that eventually blossomed into the Union Theater, and I walked away, you know, after this weekend saying, man, I got to go there. Mm-hmm. So when you came here, there was a whole lot already going on.
Yeah.
What was floating your boat? Who was turning your crank at that point?
The first few shows I saw, well, I made friends with Mike Martin almost immediately.
Yeah.
And Michael Martin is a fantastic guy and a great musician, great arts guy.
Who's not making nearly enough music,
no,
I should point out.
No, and he's moved away from Peterborough. It just seems so unjust that he doesn't live in Peterborough anymore. He's so Peterborough. But I made friends with him, I think probably 4 or 5 days into living here. I happened upon one of his shows at the Underdog, and I was a little drunk, and I misinterpreted some of his banter and started heckling him, and so we made friends on the basis of that. he definitely was someone early on who was very, very supportive of me, and anything, it's sort of that whole scene. I remember the around the Union Theater and seeing the Born Again Pagans play at the Union Theater, seeing 3 Seconds to Think early on was a pretty exciting thing. Scratch in those early days, they didn't play that often, but when they did play, it was pretty mind-blowing.
Absolutely. So you come here, you see all this music going on. You're a guy, you're a skinny kid with an acoustic guitar, mm-hmm. And you listen to some of those early recordings of you, and they're pretty bare bones. But
yeah.
Then there's a musical flowering that happens as well, and you end up collaborating with so many people. I gave a brief rundown, but I mean that's a fraction of the people that you've played with. What have been some of your favorite collaborations in Peterborough? Because this scene is so deep.
Yeah. Well, I started off collaborating. I mean, when I was in high school, my cousins are Jenny Whiteley and Dan Whiteley of the powerful Whiteley mafia in the folk mafia family in the folk world. So I when high school, I played high school talent shows with Jenny, and she's a much, much better singer than me. So I played guitar and she sang, or I sang. Sang the melody and she would sing the harmony. So I always knew I liked to have that kind of relationship with people, and I always knew I was much better at writing and accompanying than I was at. I was too shy to really be the front man. So I knew that when I arrived in Peterborough, I wanted to play in a band and I wanted to collaborate with other people. So I liked doing the skinny guy with an acoustic guitar thing, but I had always collaborated with people, and always, very early on, I started playing music with Aaron Cavan, mm-hmm. playing in Zero Conspiracy and then More Nasty Reds with him. And that's become a lifetime thing. We still play in Blues in the Bottle together. So I think in terms of the longest standing collaboration has been with Aaron.
Well, and it's funny because you take a look at those early collaborations, particularly with someone like Aaron, and now you're doing jug music, so similar lineups, but a complete about face in music.
Yeah,
what is it that allows you to draw from such a wide musical palette?
Well, when I was growing up, I was exposed to a lot of folk music and a lot of sort of singer-songwritery stuff. That was what was playing around the house. And then when I was in high school, I started. I really did not like commercial radio in the 80s when I was growing up.
No one likes commercial radio from the 80s.
Yeah. Well, there were people, and I've met people since then who've told me that I should go back and listen to, and there are some things that were on the radio that I didn't pay any attention to that were actually good. But at the time, I just shut that off completely and became a kind of obsessive, absorbing myself in weird stuff at the margin. So I was obsessed with surf music in high school. I was obsessed with South African music, Township Jive from South Africa, and just all these weird things. So when I got to PR and met musicians and Zero Conspiracy and More Nasty Reds, where everybody was drawing on all these disparate backgrounds, and we wanted to have, a jazz, screaming jazz guitar over a Latin groove and that kind of thing. So we could do all that kind of eclecticism was there for all of us because we'd all had that kind of marginal approach to music.
Well, and you talk about, absorbing all these influences and absorbing all these sounds. But here we are, we're at Trent Radio. We both started Trent University, at the same time in the early 90s. And we can't help remove ourselves from the academic institution that we attended. So, I mean, as a songwriter, as much as you were growing, and as a musician, as much as you were growing, you were also growing as an academic.
Yeah.
And how did that academic experience at Trent inform you as a writer?
Yeah, early on, quite a bit. I remember the first song that I wrote. The song that I came to Peterborough with that was sort of my calling card was This Hotel, which I think we're going to listen to later on in the show. It was sort of the first song that I played to Michael Martin. I know that he raised his eyebrows at. But at the end of my first year, I wrote a song called The Song from the Walls of a Scotch Sanitarium, mm-hmm. which was about Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon, which was based on reading the end of the Norton Anthology, reading ahead in the Norton Anthology of Literature when I was supposed to be writing an essay. I don't know what I was supposed to be writing an essay on. Anyway, the upshot is I didn't write the essay. I didn't really write very many essays at all in first year. So in the early on, I was sort of absorbing the general idea culture of Trent without actually going to school. I got rusticated. I didn't really do much work in first year. I was rusticated, so I was out for my second year. Mm-hmm. And then when I went back to school, so in 1993, I really started my academic career for real. And at that point, my hunger for new ideas I was still interested in new music, but I was primarily interested in ideas from school. And so a lot of that went into my songwriting. When I was in 389, a lot of my songwriting came from identity politics and post-colonial theory and psychoanalysis and things like that. So it was very clearly drawing from that. It was less so by the time I got to later on when I was in graduate school and I was playing with the Silver Hearts, it was less like that I was more wasn't writing about those same kind of things. But there was a period there in my late undergrad when I was absolutely absorbing things that I was reading in books and putting them in songs.
You mentioned the Silver Hearts, and I think they're probably the last people I'm going to bring up. And it's easy for them to be the last thing to bring up because there's so darn many of them. And if you're going to talk about the Silver Hearts, you could probably do it for you know, a day.
Yeah.
But there is there's collaboration at its finest. They're at the highest number. You're what, 13?
14, I think, is the highest number.
And it's mayhem. It's musical mayhem. When the Silver Hearts get up to full speed, it's an absolute cacophony of sound. How does it feel to be in that cyclone of sound when the Silver Hearts are on?
It's pretty exciting. I mean, I think the Silver Hearts don't really shine at with the upbeat songs. I think that those tend to get, everybody has to sort of become lockstep when you start getting the tempo up. But when we've got something that's sort of a mid-tempo kind of thing, we can really get very, very funky with quite a few of us playing together. And that's really fun. And the excitement level on stage is just, being right inside of it is really exciting. And it's a fun band to play in because you can't really contribute a whole lot. You can only contribute a tiny little bit. So you're playing a tiny little fraction, knowing that it fits in with all the other little fractions. But a lot of times you're listening, and so it's a really nice band to be in for that reason.
I think that there's probably 100 musicians in Peterborough who are jealous of the Silver Hearts, not just for their success, but just the roller coaster that playing with the Hearts must be. So it's great.
I don't know. Jealous of the roller coaster. I mean, it's a complicated. Anytime you get 14 people together and try to have some kind of career, it's going to be a nightmare. So I'll just leave it at that. Don't be jealous.
A beautiful, beautiful nightmare, Dave. We have to get going. We have Kemi, who's waiting in the wings, and we have a lot of great questions for her. But I want to go out with another song, and we went from 2014 for Fortune's Wheel, and we're going to fly way back in time to 1993 from your release Ugly, and this is called This Hotel. This album is great because there's so many people that I love on it. John Bishop on Penny Whistle. I used to live with John and had the opportunity to tour with him. Ken Brown on fiddle, mind-blowing. Randy Innes on percussion. Dirty Pat Walsh on blues harp. Can you set up this hotel for us before we go to break.
Yeah, I was. This is the tail end of high school that I wrote this. I was obsessed with Elvis Costello, so there's a lot of Elvis Costello in the lyrics. A love song that is primarily a fairly angry love song. What else? I was really into rockabilly, and you can hear a little. I actually play the lead guitar on this. I haven't played like this in a long time, but at the time, I was really into this kind of guitar playing. So.
Yeah, it's incredible. I Facebook messaged Dave, and I said, "Dave, who's playing lead on this?" And he answers quickly, "That's me playing lead on this." And so, yeah, Dave is full of wonderful surprises. Although it shouldn't be a surprise that Dave sounds that good on lead guitar. Anyways, we're gonna go out right now with This Hotel.
I get my rocks off every day. I've learned to smile a bit and give some things away. But the smell of burning roses always sends her off to sleep. And I'm left alone to wonder who the hell put all these velvet paintings on my walls. There's nothing wrong with this hotel, it's just I'm used to sleeping closer to the brimstone and the burning gates of hell. There's no more lonely moments and no more bed of stone, but this hotel will never heal my broken bones. I think I'm afraid to fall asleep, cause this room's so tiny and the syrup's getting deep. And I can't think why I'd want to leave this sweet hotel behind me. In all my brightest dreams, my darkest nightmares seem to find me. There's nothing wrong with this hotel, it's just I'm used to sleeping closer to the brimstone and the burning gates of hell. There's no more lonely moments and no more bed of stone, but this hotel is only human, she could never own me. There's nothing wrong with this hotel. So hard to be sincere. I start to tremble when the words get out too clear. But the words don't matter, they're just dancing, I'm just wasting time. If I said I love you, I could find some simple stupid rhyme. There's nothing wrong with this hotel, it's just I'm used to sleeping closer to the brimstone and the burning gates of hell. There's no more lonely moments, no more bed of stone, but this hotel will never heal my broken bones. There's nothing wrong with this hotel. There's nothing wrong with this hotel.
That was the one, the only, Dave Tough.
I like that. That was fun.
That's a rump shaker of a song. I was doing a little bit of a dance in my chair. Kemi?
Yes.
Capo is joining me on the air right now. This is
weird for me.
Yeah, you're sitting in the wrong chair.
I'm not used to being interviewed.
Full disclosure here. Okay. This is well, not to you.
Oh,
you,
okay.
You know this already.
I was like,
to those folks out there.
Mm-hmm. Ones aren't, oh, okay.
This is actually a Trent Radio show swap.
Yes.
I was on your show.
You were.
Which is the
People of Peterborough.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lovely time. Although you gave me a full hour, and I'm giving you 25 minutes.
Well, you know.
So I feel like I'm cheating you. I'll have to have you back. Kemi, she is, as I mentioned, the Settlement Services Coordinator at the New Canadian Center. Mm-hmm. Originally from Nigeria. I'm just reading off your bio here.
Okay.
Raised in a number of countries in West Africa. Moved to Canada in 2005 to attend Trent University.
Yes.
Where you graduated with a BA Honours in English Lit and International Development Studies. You are an avid feminist and cyclist.
Well, not so much cyclists anymore after my bike got stolen, but I still enjoy cycling. Yeah, it's been about 2.5 weeks now. Actually, no, 3 weeks as of tomorrow. My bike has been stolen, but I still like cycling.
I'm going to get that guy.
Have to. You know, I really do want my bike back.
What kind of bike is it? Let's do a shout
out. It is a Sky Blue Norco VFR 18. It has a half broken bell on it. It also has a one less car sticker on it, as well as a sticker from Fontaine Source for Sports, which is where I bought it, by a local, and a police sticker on it as well.
And the police did not help you out finding this?
No, the police have actually been helpful. I reported it. They're looking, I mean, they're doing as much as they can, right? But bikes go missing a lot in Peterborough. And I'm not one of those people who is like, oh, I lost my bike, I want my property back. But it's like, I don't have a car. My bike is my only form of transportation, so...
Yeah, and that hurts.
It does.
It's not, you know what? It's not the only thing that hurts right now because, Kemi, let's get this right out of the way right now. I know, like me, you're a huge Montreal Canadiens fan.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, we took a thrashing last night.
What's going on? Like, I feel like we spent all our energy on the Senators, and then we were just like, ugh. We're done.
I don't know.
We do this every year. It's really annoying.
It's a hard tournament to win.
True.
But maybe we can channel some positive energy.
Yes.
We'll try to get our mojo back. We'll try to get our beloved Bleu Blanc et Rouge back on track. But Montreal Canadiens. You know what? I'm going to guess that you weren't always a Montreal Canadiens fan.
No, I was not.
When you know, as a younger person, was hockey even on your radar?
Well, field hockey was.
Oh, okay.
But not ice hockey. And field hockey is quite different, actually, from ice hockey. But even the field hockey that I played was not, like, anywhere close to... So, yes and no. Like, I played during, like, recess field hockey, so...
But you know, here in Canada, it's all things ice and snow and hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And in Canada, well, it's not all things ice and snow and hockey, because there are an awful lot of new Canadians who don't come from places of ice and snow and hockey,
such as myself,
such as yourself, which is a great segue to your role with the New Canadian Centre.
Mm-hmm.
For those out there who don't know what the New Canadian Centre is or what you do there, could you flesh out that part of your life a bit?
Sure. So the NCC is a settlement services organization. So we are on the corner of Romaine and Aylmer, just across the street from the YMCA. So what we do is we provide services to newcomers. And so newcomers is basically anyone who wasn't born in Canada or anyone who was born in Canada but has left for a significant amount of time and is coming back. So I always tell people, imagine that you have moved to a completely new country. What do you need? So you need a place to live. You need education if you're looking for that. You need employment. You need access to services. So everybody here has an OHIP card, but it's like, so say you move to France, like how would you find out what the health system is like there? Is health private? Is there a national health care like we have here? So what we do at the NCC is we basically introduce all of these things. We basically introduce Canada to newcomers, and we assist newcomers if they need particular help with something. Like, for example, I did not know the process of how to get a driver's license. So the NCC helped me. It's not very difficult, but like I had no idea where to even look for that, right? So they were like, oh, go to the MTO website, and they helped me with that process, and I have my G license.
Well, I mean, I get it. If I were, I mean, you're from Nigeria. If I were to parachute into Nigeria and decide, you know, first of all, you know, where do I go to eat? You know, little things like
right,
that.
Right.
You know, how does my currency work?
Exactly.
And if I'm a young person and I want to, you know, navigate academia, you know, how the heck does this work?
Exactly.
So your gig with them, what specifically do you?
So basically what I just talked about, everything but employment. So I do settlement services.
Okay.
And I'm the coordinator. So we have a number of settlement services counselors, and I'm the coordinator. So
great.
Sort of now, the boss.
Did you, at one point, were you doing the employment?
Yes. So I started at the NCC doing employment services. And then I switched over to settlement.
I got
but employment is sort of like a subsidiary to sort of like it's still under the same umbrella of settlement services. So,
And how many people go through through the doors of the NCC? I mean,
a lot. I can't. Well, I know last year's stats because they've been ratified by the board, so I can say that. But this year's stats are AGM's not till June, so I can't release that information yet. Mm-hmm. Last year we saw over 500 new clients.
Wow.
Now I don't know how many people we saw in general, mm-hmm. but I mean, new clients already to see 500 new people, that doesn't count the people that keep coming back, right?
So no.
We see a lot of people.
Well, and that's eye opening as well. A lot of people think, okay, well, Peterborough, same old, it doesn't really change. And you realize that there's this incredible influx of people and incredible influx of ideas and an incredible influx of people who are trying to find their way in a new community. So fittingly enough, you are a new Canadian.
Yes.
Well, newish, I suppose.
Well, I'm always going to be a new Canadian, you know, like... It's a blessing and it's a curse in a way. I'm always going to be a new Canadian, at least even to myself, and to every whenever I meet people, they're like, "Oh, where are you from?" If I say Peterborough, they're like, "No, but where are you really from?"
Yeah.
Which happens to not to born in and raised Canadians as well. As soon as your skin is not like the Caucasian skin tone, people are always like, "No, but like, what's your ancestry?"
No, really.
So I take that and then I turn it around to them and I say, "Well, where are you from?" And they're like, "Well, Toronto." I'm like, "But like, are you First Nations?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "Well, then where are you from?" And
exactly.
They're like, "Well, what do you mean? I'm Canadian." I'm like, "No, you're not." Well, you are, but what's your ancestry?
It's a strange situation, and I mean, none of us, I guess all of us in a way are immigrants. All of us
we're
are
all from somewhere.
We're all from somewhere. But you in particular are from Nigeria.
Yes.
And then you moved around a bit, so you're well traveled.
My parents were amazing people. Are amazing people, not where they're still around, and they're still amazing. My dad worked for in finance, and part of his job with a particular bank that he was working with was he moved around a lot. So as he moved, he wanted his family to be with him, and so we followed him around. And my mom is a doctor. Well, she's retired now, but she's an MD, so it was easy for her to get work sort of wherever we moved. So that's one of the reasons why we moved around a lot. And I love it. I mean, I've learned a lot from it. I've lost a little bit from it as well, but I think I've gained more than I lost. So.
And what got you to Peterborough? What got you to Trent University?
Well, no offense, Trent, but I originally wanted to go to McGill. I was accepted to McGill and I wanted to go there.
I would like to point out that this is McGill's loss in our game.
But my brother, so I'm the youngest of four kids and I'm the only girl. And the brother just before me had just gone to Trent for a year. And, I was my parents' last kid and their only daughter. So they were like, "Please go to Trent." So I said, "All right, I'll check it out for a year. And then if I don't like it, I'm transferring." But I came to Trent and I loved it. So that's, and then I just stayed.
Wonderful. Well, and you've stayed for quite a while as well. I mean, when we were on your show, you were lamenting the fact that it's awfully tough to penetrate into a new community and to find
it
work.
It can be.
And since then, I mean, I take a look at you right now, and you seem like, okay, well, this is the place to stay forever. Do we get to keep you?
I don't know. People keep asking me that. I feel, I don't know.
Hey, Kenny, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Because of the way I grew up, I live sort of like is it sedentary life? Is that the right word?
Sedentary? Well, no. Sedentary would be sitting
it's
in
like
your
sand.
Butt.
Okay, yeah. So I'm non-sedentary. Whatever. I move around a lot.
Yeah.
So I feel uncomfortable staying in one place for too long. But at the same time, the longer I stay in Peterborough, the more of a sense of community I develop and the less willing I am to let go of that and start that up somewhere else.
What's really neat for me is that you have absorbed Peterborough, and you radiate Peterborough so much. When I asked you if there was any music that you wanted to hear,
yes.
First of all, you chose a song that I was using in my break.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page there. And then you said, okay, well, I want to hear some Lorewoods, and I'm like, wow, man, like you know the Peterborough scene really well. And you know what? Let's listen to the Lorewoods
okay.
for a few minutes.
Yes, I really like the song.
So you had asked for Treat Me Right.
Right.
Okay, let's set that up.
Okay.
Dinner, I go to bed, but you keep me up all night. Darling, you won't let me be, and I'm getting out tonight. Or I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right. Well, you can have the house, babe, but you know I'm gonna take the car. Go ahead, try to reason with me, cause you won't get very far. Darling, you won't let me be, and I'm getting out tonight. Or I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right. Well, if there's one thing I could say, don't you ever treat another man this way. Be all sad and blue, I like the woman that I once knew, so strong and full of love, but now it's gone, what you gonna do? Well, I'm just sitting on a westbound train, I'm tapping my foot on the floor. I used to see that color red, but I don't see it anymore. Darling, you won't let me be, well, I'm getting out tonight. Yeah, I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right, yeah. Another man this way. You're gonna be all sad and blue, and I like the woman that I once knew, so strong and full of love, but now it's gone, what you gonna do? Well, I'm just sitting on a westbound train, and I'm tapping my foot on the floor. I used to see the color red, but I don't see it anymore. Darling, you won't let me be, and I'm getting out tonight. Well, I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right. Yeah, I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right. Yes, I'm gonna find another woman that'll treat me right.
That was the Lorewoods until we meet again. Well, mm-hmm. why'd you choose the Lorewoods?
Well, I was introduced to the Lorewoods by Matt, my friend Matt Greco.
Matt Greco.
And I don't know, they're just so fun. I've never actually seen them play live, but I was at the Pig's Ear one night and when they debuted the video to this song, and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. There's so much talent in Peterborough. First of all, the song is just fun. And the music video is even more fun to watch. And I've listened to a couple other songs, and I just really like them. So
groovy.
Mm-hmm.
At Alumni House, where I'm hanging out each and every day. Well, not every day, but most days of the week.
Yeah.
I always hear so much about the international program,
mm-hmm.
the Trent International Program.
Yeah.
But it's something I have zero experience in. But yet there's all these glowing reviews from people who've said this has really made their introduction to Peterborough, you know, a home or a new community.
Right.
Is that what you felt when you came here?
Definitely. I mean, so I landed in Montreal in August, like August 27th, and then I took another flight to Toronto, and then I took a bus from Toronto to, I forget where it's called, wherever they held Tip Camp at the time, Camp Kawartha. And so my first introduction to Canada and Peterborough was Camp Kawartha, which is where they hold Tip Camp. So I was immediately like shuttled to this camp where I got to meet a bunch of other international students and all the staff from the Tip office as well. And they introduced me to Peterborough. They introduced me to Canada. They introduced me to what my next 4 years of my life was going to be. So they were really instrumental in me like figuring out like my life. Basically, they were basically like an NCC of sorts for international students in particular at Trent. So,
your first Trent experience really was Camp Kawartha?
Yes.
how blown was your brain by that? Because you go to Camp Kawartha and it's this lush semi-wilderness setting. And
To be honest, like it was good, but it also wasn't great because I'm from a hot climate. So yeah. I thought this was winter and I was cold. I didn't have the right clothing. And we were sleeping in like bunk beds and cabins, which now I love. But at the time I was like, what is this? We went canoeing, which is like quintessential Canadian, yeah. But I didn't know how to canoe, and the girl I was canoeing with had no clue either. And I was in the back, I don't know why, so I was steering, and she got scared, so she jumped ship, and so I had to like steer this canoe into shore like all by myself. But in hindsight, I was like, that was a Canadian experience, like canoeing on my second day in Canada.
Well, it's funny. I mean, there are many people who are born in Canada who are multi-generational Canadians who have never been in a canoe in their entire lives. Mm-hmm. I know that Ontario Parks and Parks Canada are doing all these programs to get people into the parks for the first time. So you got more of that, you know, maple syrup mousse pure Canadiana thing on your first day than a lot of people.
Yeah, and the Tip office does a great job at trying to get international students integrate, like doing Canadian stuff as well. So like I know they organize trips to like what's it called, that the place with the maple syrup on the snow and you eat it and it's like taffy.
Quebec?
No.
A sugar bush?
Sugar bush maple, but there's a specific farm that we always go to. Anyways, they do something like that. They do like
McLean's?
Yes, thank you.
That's just me wearing my foodie hat now.
Trips to Wonderland, you know, but like different trips to places in town locally and like in the GTA, just to get people like out of their dorm rooms and out of their homes and like being part of the Canadian society, which I think is great.
And it strikes me as something that would, there's a certain measure of globalization in a good way, where if you're part of a Tip program, because all of a sudden you're being introduced almost by necessity to people from across the world, and those conversations must be deeply weird sometimes as you're trying to find a common ground.
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes people are like, oh, you're from Nigeria, oh, I know somebody else from Nigeria, like you guys should talk, and then I go meet them, I'm like, I have nothing to say to you. You know, like, yes, we're from the same country, but like, that doesn't automatically mean that we're going to be best friends. But I got to meet people from all around the world. Some that I, you know, became immediate friends with, other times that, you know, it took time, but I loved it because I went to international schools growing up. So it was really nice to like stay in that environment where I could be surrounded by people that were from different backgrounds and have those interesting conversations.
And it seems to be something that's resonating through your life, because just recently, just in March, you're in New York.
Yes.
And you're at the UN, and you don't get much more international than that. And you're a delegate at the Commission on the Status of Women at the UN. First of all, how'd that come about? How'd that transpire?
I was very lucky. I sit on the board of the local YWCA of Peterborough, Halliburton. And as a member of the YWCA Canada, you're also part of YWCA World. And each year, NGOs are invited to participate at as a part of the Commission on the Status of Women. So I applied and I got funding and they selected me to go. And so I went representing Canada as well as YWCA Peterborough in this Commission on the Status of Women. So I talked to other NGOs, people from other NGOs, and I also was very fortunate to speak to like representatives of the Canadian government as well and say, this is what Peterborough needs. This is what Ontario needs. How can you help us? So.
Now, for those of us who, you know, have not been a delegate at the UN, that's you out there. Have you been a delegate at the UN? What does that mean? What do you do?
It's a lot of listening, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to listen before you talk a lot of the time. So you go to a number of sessions in which usually people are presenting like research or work that they've done for the past year, past couple of years. And then there's usually a question and peer time and then a time for conversation. So one that I really enjoy, I really enjoyed all the ones that I went to, but one of the ones that I went to was put on by YWC Canada. And it was talking about the 1,200 plus missing and murdered Indigenous women in mm-hmm. Canada. So they talked about, you know, first of all, they just introduced the issue because a lot of people don't know about it. Yeah. They talked about the lack of
accountability.
Thank you, by the Canadian government so far. And they just talked about like what the YWC is doing to you know, in their part to address the issue. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was just amazing. And then at the end, we had a round circle dance. So it was, I don't know, it was just really well done. And then I got to talk to other people as well to see what, especially the American Indigenous peoples that were there, to talk to them like, okay, so how have you guys been doing? Like, do you have any tips for Canada? Do you have any tips for us? Like, so it was neat.
If there was a takeaway, if there was something that really, really resonated with you from this, and
from
I'm sure
CSW?
There's going to be more than one.
It would be that there's so much more work to be done and the fight is not over.
Ow. And, I mean, that's spoken like a true feminist who says...
Well, it's the truth.
what do you then take to Peterborough from this? What's your next steps?
What is my... People keep asking me that, and I still haven't quite figured out what I'm going to do. But one of the things I want to do is tell stories. So one of the things that is really important to me and the YWC Peterborough is women in politics, so helping mm-hmm. women in politics. I believe that I'm going to be working with them, hopefully, to tell the stories of the women in Peterborough and Halliburton, who have been involved in politics, whether it's like as a volunteer on someone's campaign, whether they ran, whether they sat on municipal mm-hmm. government of any sort, and talking to them about their stories and asking them, how can we help and encourage other women, particularly young women, to get involved? And what were your stories like? What was your experience like? What can the YWCA do to help in the future for any woman who is looking to run? How can we support them and how can we be a good leader?
You are you're a person who, as you pointed out, loves stories. And on your Trent Radio show, we hear a whole bunch of incredibly great stories. And they are the people of Peterborough. They're the stories of the people that are mm-hmm. around us. When is that show? You might as well give it a plug now. We've got like less than a minute left.
Well, the show has taken a bit of a hiatus for the summer.
Okay. But you're back in the fall.
But I will be back in the fall, and I may start up a little bit later in the summer as a podcast, but mm-hmm. I definitely will be back at Trent Radio come September.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Kemi, thank you very much for hanging out here today. Thanks
no worries.
For being a lovely guest and a wonderful person.
Thank you for having me.
A few other quick thank yous to people out there. To Trent University's Communications Department, thank you for letting me raid your news feed each week. To Alumni Affairs, thank you for putting on such wonderful programs that alumni are taking part of each and every day. And to those two lovely girls waiting for me at home, one woman, one little girl, Krista and Clara, it is now 8:01. Clara, you should be in bed. I'll see you both when I get home. And that is it. We will see you next week on Trent Voices. Have a lovely week.